This is Manage Your Money God's Way, presented by Compass Catholic Ministries, where our mission is to teach what the Bible tells us are the best practices for handling money. Yes, the Bible. That's our workbook. Over 2,500 verses in the Bible dealing specifically with how to handle money and possessions. And we teach these principles in our small group Bible study, Navigating Your Finances God's Way. You can learn more by going to compasscatholic.org. Just click on Books and Studies. My name is Steve Holbrook, and with me, the co-founders of Compass Catholic Ministries, John and Evelyn Bean. You two were recently conducting a breakout session at the National Association of Family Life Ministry Conference. These are people at the parish and diocese level that work with couples to have better marriages, be better parents, and to help them teach your children about their faith. If you can take us through your session, and the topic you were asked to address was Money Matters in Marriage.
Today, we're going to share a little bit of that session with you. We're going to recreate it, basically, including some recommendations and comments from the participants who were in the workshop. When couples say their vows at the altar, you know, they don't promise to be completely open and honest about all their financial information from this day forward.
But maybe they should.
Maybe they should. If the husband and wife aren't honest with each other about their entire financial situation, it can lead to big problems in marriage. And you wonder what else they might be hiding if it's not just financial stuff. If money isn't an open topic that is easily discussed, hiding questionable purchases can become a way of life.
And we call that financial infidelity. And it's things like a secret bank or credit card account that's concealed from their spouse, or maybe spending $500 or more on a purchase without telling their spouse. Maybe there's missing cash in the bank accounts, or there's expensive purchases that are made without letting the other spouse know about it.
All of these things break down the trust in a marriage. And the longer it goes on, the more the marriage gets tied into knots of distrust and suspicion until, you know, there's no hope of untying the knots and getting everything to come together the way that it really should. When spouses don't share financial information with each other, it can lead to divorce.
But everything in our culture pushes us toward thinking that money is the most important aspect of our life, and buying more and bigger and newer stuff will ultimately make us happy and fulfilled. And this leads us to think that finances are an individual matter, and it's okay for a married couple to keep their finances separate.
Differences about money put a divide between a husband and a wife, and that's contrary to the unity that they need in order to have a strong marriage. If they don't talk to each other about their finances, it puts the marriage at risk.
You know, and our culture just makes the situation worse and really does nothing to encourage us to be financially responsible, whether we're single or we're married.
You know, Evelyn, advertisers manipulate us with their consistent messages, what we need to buy in order to be fulfilled and happy and successful. I mean, you've never seen anything like that, right?
Not on the advertisements I watch.
The focus of advertising isn't about the product meeting our needs. The focus is on sex appeal, wealth, power, prestige.
You know, and the other thing is a lot of the focus of advertising is what we deserve rather than what we need or what we can afford, which is a totally different way of looking at things.
Deserve. That's all that entitlement is coming back to bite us. You know, advertising is everywhere. It's on the radio, the TV, the magazines, the newspapers, social media. We even wear advertising on our clothes. Our culture encourages debt. Over half the adult population has at least two credit cards. But 14% of our population has more than 10 credit cards.
So that doesn't include things like car loans and mortgages and home equity lines of credit and that kind of stuff.
We're talking about plastic.
Credit cards.
Plastic,
okay.
Yeah. The average consumer, if you take all credit obligations, the average consumer has 13 obligations of debt that show up on their credit report. That would be credit cards, mortgage, car loans, lines of credit, those kinds of things.
You know, John, one of the interesting things that we found when we were doing a little bit of research for the talk we gave at the NACFLAM conference is that there's approximately 15,000 McDonald's in the U.S., but there's over 20,000 payday loan storefronts.
Wow, that's huge.
And if you're not familiar with the term payday loan, it's a lending institution that caters to people on the edge of the economic scale, and they loan money out at outrageous rates. Have you ever run into somebody who's used those payday loans, Steve?
Yeah, and it's legal what they do. That's the sad part.
I mean, it's like 400% interest.
Loan shark, it used to be called.
And it's just, it's amazing how many people try to use that as a short-term fix, and they get into this long-term merry-go-round of just not being able to pay those loans off. And even though they seem to be doing well on the outside, you never can tell all those financial problems that are hidden inside the marriage.
And you know, what's really sad, Steve, is that while that 400% is legal in today's system, our politicians are lobbying to be able to increase that interest percentage even higher. It just makes no sense.
No.
That's because the politicians don't have to use those, and they really don't think about it because that's not their lifestyle.
And I hate to say this, and maybe I won't, but maybe they own them. Anyhow.
You just said it.
Oh, I was talking out loud.
Sometimes you do that, Steve. You know, when you add all the pressure from society to the typical amount of debt families have, the situation gets even worse. The average household credit card debt is about $16,000.
Struggling families, it's not unusual for them to have $20,000 to $40,000 of credit card debt. I remember when we were struggling many years ago, we had about a little bit over $35,000 of credit card debt. That's because when the money ran out, there were still credit cards and everything was good.
Were you one of those with the 10 credit cards?
I don't think we had 10, but no, we had too many.
We probably had four or five, though.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, we've also met, Steve, at least two, maybe four couples that had over $100,000 in credit card debt. That doesn't include the mortgage or the cars or the student loans or any of that stuff.
And, you know, when younger families with them, their student debt, and today's average student debt is just about $40,000. But it can, you know, we have actually personally talked to somebody who had $200,000 of student loan, and that wasn't because they spent, you know, uppity years going to law school or medical school. Or this particular person has degrees in social work.
How is
she going to be able to pay back $200,000?
Or how is she going to be able to purchase a home?
Long story.
Not going to happen.
And what about car loans? You know, that's how much, John, another $15,000 to $70,000 if there's one or two cars?
Yeah, and you know, how many people are satisfied with just having one new car?
We just about can't manage with one car if you have kids going in different directions and two people working jobs and all that. And then there's the mortgage, right?
Yep, and that's big. The the average mortgage is somewhere around maybe $130,000 or $140,000, but, it could be way more than that, $150,000, $200,000. So it's easy to see how just an average person making an average salary could have as much as $300,000 or more of credit obligations, debt obligations.
So that makes it easy to see why they don't want to talk about it, because it's just so overwhelming.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. So is it the lack of communication between husband and wife that you find gets them into this deep hole?
No, they're not tracking their pennies.
But it's also the lack of communication.
Well, I was going to ask, when you were talking earlier about each having their own account, which is okay, but part of that that formula is they should be talking about what each are doing with their money.
Absolutely.
Because they're responsible for each other's debt should something happen.
Well, and lack of communication can be a real trouble area of marriage, and that's especially true if the topic is about money or the lack of money. We read some surveys, and many people, I think it was like 18 to 20% said money was a taboo subject in their family. They just didn't talk about it. They existed in like this parallel universe where your money is your money and my money is my money, and we're just not going to talk about how we work together or how much debt we have or how we're going to dig out of debt.
That's not the reality of when the debt collector comes to the door. They're not going to say, I don't need to talk to you, I need to talk to him.
Right.
They're responsible for each other's debt.
Yes.
Absolutely, absolutely. And 36% said that talking about money makes them feel uncomfortable.
They're the ones I would suspect are hiding something.
Yeah.
That could be. Yeah. That could be. Well, 72% of all adults, whether they're married or not, reported feeling stressed out about money at least some of the time. And what we found is that many couples simply don't want to talk about money because they're afraid of that conflict that might develop.
It's easier just to keep on spending and ignore that that looming problem, that elephant in the room.
That black cloud on the horizon that's going to quickly overtake you. But you we're working with a couple now that had 6 months worth of unopened mail on their kitchen counter because they knew there were bills in there that they couldn't pay. And it was just, it was easier to just push it aside and not think about it than because they didn't know what to do or how to do it.
But you would think that would weigh on their mind. I can see that's where stress comes in. You know it's sitting there. You know there's a large number in that envelope. There's money that I owe. That would stress me out not knowing.
Yeah, they were totally stressed by it. There's no question about that.
Well, and the other thing almost seems to be a blame game. If I want to stop, I want him to stop spending, but I don't want to stop spending. When he stops, I'll stop. Or when she stops, I'll stop. So it's like everybody's waiting for the next person to make the first move as far as straightening things out, and they just kind of go down this path where they both ignore each other.
And that's where you found the lack of communication before they get married on discussion about money, how each handled their own.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
It starts there, and if it doesn't get solved at that point in time, it just gets worse when they get married. People think that not talking about money is a good thing, but if they're not talking about money, it's going to eventually lead to conflict, whether it's a month, a year, 10 years down the road. It's going to lead to conflict sooner or later.
We've heard the term that opposites attract. We always have thought about that as a positive. It creates better interactions, and overall the couple is stronger as they complement each other. Couples who are opposite when it comes to money can be a never-ending conflict unless they can find a way to work together.
Every time my wife and I meet with a couple, one of the first questions we do ask is, do you talk about finances as a couple? And if they say no, then we insist that they start at least once a month having a sit down, talk about finances. You never want a financial surprise waiting for you around the corner. This is Manage Your Money God's Way, presented by Compass Catholic Ministries. John and Evelyn Bean, the co-founders of Compass Catholic Ministries, are here with me today, and they're sharing information from their recent seminar at the National Association of Family Life Ministries Conference. And the topic was Money Matters in Marriages. And Evelyn, the question I have is, what about the church's involvement in money matters at the family level?
So we talked about how not discussing money and not having good communications around money can ruin a marriage. But what we haven't talked about is what the church is doing about it. When does the church actually teach couples how to manage money? Do you hear about money in church, John?
Well, the church talks about money when they ask for it. They've got enhanced offertory programs. They've got capital campaigns. They've got missions they need to support or outreach programs they need to support. And then if you're just getting married, you're going to hear about it in your pre-Cana program or engaged encounter program. But even then, it's just really small. We've kind of categorized it to be about 7% of the time that they have with these engaged couples. They do mention budgets and they do mention debt. Often they don't talk about credit reports, credit scores, how much each spouse can spend without a conversation, limiting lifestyles. That covers pre-Cana, but what about the rest of us? How often do we hear a homily on being a good steward of the money we have, or spending wisely, or making good financial choices, or how to teach our children about handling money?
You know, and I think integrating faith and finances through the church gives us a better perspective than what our culture teaches us. And once people learn to talk about faith and finances together, it improves their communication and the discussions about money become more meaningful and more constructive rather than destructive.
So many of our families are having financial challenges.
And it doesn't matter whether they're on the edge and just earning a little bit or if they're earning a real good high six-figure income. These people are struggling with money.
Well, and outward appearances are not always what's going on the inside. You know, they might have a nice house, drive nice cars, and, you know, exhibit an unbelievable lifestyle. And they're just racking up debt, dollar after dollar after dollar.
So as a church, we're called to help people with their struggles and challenges. And we really very rarely hear sermons on being good stewards of the monies God's given us. You know, I know you love the example of the rich young man, John. What is that story?
Well, the rich young man asked Jesus what he had to do to have eternal life. And Jesus told him what to do. And the man said, well, I've already done all that. I follow the commandments, you know, that type of thing. So then the man was challenged to sell all his possessions and give the money to the poor. And the parable ends, so he went away sad because he had great wealth. This was a good man. He did everything he was supposed to do. He loved God. He followed the commandments and all the other rules. But his stuff was more important to him than the faith he had developed. He had a huge attitude problem.
You know, too many times we live our life here on earth as though all our material things is the only thing we should be concerned about. And most people don't learn to manage their finances in a way that integrates their faith. You know, I think most people learn about their finances in marriage from their parents.
Yes.
Which is great if the parents are good financial managers and have a godly attitude about money. Maybe they learn about it from their friends.
It's good if the friends are supporting and they're good financial managers, but it can be a disaster if their friends are encouraging them to spend more, to get into debt, to develop a lifestyle full of things that they can't financially support.
And we've already talked about how bad it is for our culture to teach us how to be good stewards of the money God's given us. So unfortunately, most married couples learn about finances through trial and terror, which means years of conflict and pain. So as a church, we really need to teach people that their faith and their finances go hand in hand toward having a strong marriage.
And money does matter if you've got the right attitude about it. And that's important.
So in our breakout session, we broke up the group into small groups and we asked several questions. One of the questions was reasons why parishes don't teach practical money matters.
So some of the comments that we got were things like, well, they don't think about it, or they assume that that's not their role. They think that they don't have the skills to do it, or they don't see, and this is a big one, I think, they don't see the correlation between faith and finances.
The other thing is a lot of times I think churches or parishes or pastors are afraid that if they teach about money, it's a backdoor way of asking people to donate more, which it really isn't, but it's kind of a...
But when they want it, they don't mind asking for it. I think some priests don't think that talking about money is a sacred issue. But
all areas of life are sacred.
Yes, exactly, exactly. And if it wasn't supposed to be talked about, why are there over 2,500 verses in the Bible that deal with money and possessions?
Sometimes I wonder if some of the priests lack the experience in handling finances themselves on a personal level.
Yes.
The money that they have. So how can I teach someone that I can't even do this myself?
There's no
so
question
it's
about
that.
That
yeah,
is an
the
issue.
Skill level.
That can't
yeah.
be an issue.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is a lot of people think that if I learn this, I'm going to have to do it, and I don't want to change what
right.
I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
I like having my credit cards and being able to shop and do all the things I'd like to have. You know, one of the things that I think occurs all too often, unfortunately, is that the parish may have financial issues, and teaching people how to be better stewards highlights the problems that the parish has financially.
You know, people don't think that money is a spiritual matter. They just don't make the connection. Shortly after our meeting in Louisiana, we had a meeting with some people, and we were talking about teaching finances to high school kids in a Catholic high school. And the principal and the president didn't make the connection between faith and finances. In a Catholic high school, they're teaching about faith, and they were going to teach about finances, but they never connected the two.
And did you share with them about the 2,500 verses, and were they aware that there were that many verses in the Bible?
Nobody's ever aware of that. That's always an eye-opener.
That's a total shock.
I agree. It was an eye-opener for me, because I thought, oh, there's no way I would have recognized that.
Yeah.
But you really don't until you really think about it and start listening to the readings.
Well, it's like the rich young man.
Yeah, exactly.
Parable of the talents. The rich fool who built more barns. You know, it just goes on and on and on.
So the other question we asked people in our breakout session was to list reasons why our parishes should be teaching people about the integration between faith and finances.
Some of the things they came up with were really obvious. It benefits the parishioners. Money causes problems in marriage. And if people understand about money, they don't feel as anxious or pressured due to the financial problems that they have.
You know, we had an email, Steve, from a priest about 2 weeks ago, and they did a survey in their parish about what their parishioners' top three concerns were. And number one on that list of things that people was concerned about were finances. That was the number one concern of his parishioners, and yet he didn't have a way to teach them.
Is that why? Hopefully that's why he sent
you the
email.
That's why he called us. Yeah. Yes. So that's good. People are finding us on the internet. One of the things that I thought was interesting that was a reason why the parish should teach about finances is because, this is what someone said, when materialism is present, so is the devil. So many times that focus on our material stuff takes our eyes away from God and points it in a secular direction that's dictated by the evil one.
Exactly, exactly. Another reason they said that we should teach about money is because it ties to Catholic social teaching, to social justice issues, to things like that.
You know, one of the best ones that I heard was that learning about faith and finances helps families become financially stable so they can fulfill their mission. You know, we have so many parents that are heads down on working and buying things and fulfilling desires and following their kids all over on these special sports teams that they take their eyes off the mission that God has for their family.
And you're talking about their vocation, what their purpose is for life.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, because people don't think about that. The other reason is because our faith should impact all areas of our life.
You know, and that's so simple. It's amazing to me that people think it's not the church's role to teach about this when it's such a big part of our life, because the church should be interested and trying to help us live a better life in all areas.
These were some of the answers of the survey that you did at this convention.
At the breakout.
I mean, these people are right on point.
It was during our small group, and then we had a large group discussion. Mm-hmm. And then the last thing that we talked about during this session was what are ways that are practical money matters that could be introduced in the parish. And we came up with some pretty reasonable ideas.
Well, we didn't come up with them. Our people did.
Yes, yes.
And one of the things I really like is to have a support program for young married couples, both while they're in pre-Cana and after their marriage, as an ongoing support, and include finances in that program.
Oh, that's an excellent idea. I love that.
I love that, yeah.
Yeah, it's not just finances, but finances is a piece to that ongoing.
It may jumpstart that communication.
Yes, absolutely. We want, they say, more talking about finances is a way to accompany people on their walk rather than just having a program such as a fundraising program or something like that.
You know, another thing, and we're actually working on this one right now, is a high school program at the school or a youth group to help teens see the integration between faith and finances.
And you know, one of the things that really touches people's hearts and makes them wake up is hearing a personal witness. And it doesn't have to be a long, involved, you know, a 90-second personal witness on how you've been affected by money or how knowing how to handle money has affected your life for the better is really a strong thing.
And one of the things that I really loved was having the finance committee take on financial education as a part of their ministry to the parish. That would be great to do.
I think that you know, all of these things are all great ideas. And, you know, it's not just important to have great ideas. It's important to implement something. So I hope that this has been helpful to you, and I hope that you can take pieces of this to your parish and implement them to improve the entire family life of the parish.
Sounded like a very productive session. John and Evelyn, thank you so much for sharing this information. And we have posted their notes on our website, compasscatholic.org. On the homepage, scroll down to show summary. And before we leave you today, let's get to one of the emails we received this week. John and Evelyn, I received a call from a debt collector about a debt from 9 years ago. It was a fee from an electric company that I did not pay because I did not feel I should have been charged the fee. The collector threatened to report it to the credit agencies, but my question is this an empty threat after 7 years?
Collection accounts can only be reported for 7 years and 6 months, 7.5 years, from the date you first fell behind to the original creditor. However, if a creditor or collector sues you afterwards and gets a judgment against you, then that can be reported separately, and a new reporting period starts all over again.
Doesn't a debt collector have to prove to you with documentation what you owe? I mean, just because somebody calls you doesn't mean much.
They have to provide some documentation.
So there should be some kind of documentation The person should get.
If you have a question for John and Evelyn, by all means, email it to ask@compasscatholic.org. Thank you so much for listening. Quick reminder, we post a brand new podcast each and every Wednesday morning. Simply go to compasscatholic.org. On the homepage, just scroll down to podcast. You're listening to Manage Your Money God's Way, and we're presented by Compass Catholic Ministries.